This is GKW. Welcome to another edition of Good Karma Wrestling. I'm Gabe Neitzel from ESPN Milwaukee. No Brian Rowitz this week. He's got the week off, but we've got it covered. Jay Hood from ESPN 1000 still hanging out here, and it's a big week. All In, which apparently is not returning to Wembley next year. They are going to be doing All In Texas. But it's a stacked card. It's an AEW card, as we come to expect, Jay Hood. And as we take a look at it, what do you think has the biggest potential to steal the show on Sunday? Again, it airs at noon Eastern time, beginning at noon Eastern time for AEW All In. As of right now, there are 10 matches scheduled. One is going to be on the pre-show with Chris Statlander and Stokely Hathaway taking on Willow Nightingale and ECE. Nine on the main pay-per-view card.
Boy, only 10 matches on the main card. AEW's in the mud. My God, the struggle that you can't even put together the 14, 15 match card that we're used to in AEW, Gabe Neitzel. Well, if you don't mind, I'd like to put over to the side MJF Ospreay and Danielson Strickland for the AEW World Championship. It's either the championship or the career for Bryan Danielson. If you don't mind, I'm going to put those to the side because I think you and I both know that those are going to be bangers.
Yep.
So from there, I'll do a countdown and say that I have four written down. Four is a three-way for the tag team championships. I just think that I still don't know who's going to win that one. I feel like it's going to change. I just don't know which team for that, the three-way that we're going to see. I believe that Jack Perry against Darby Allin is going to be interesting, the coffin match. You just know two lightweights that are on the card, they're going to do whatever they can to make it look like a demolition derby. So I think that that's going to be entertaining. Number two is Storm and Mariah May. I think there's going to be some kind of interference in that matchup to cause Storm to lose. But I believe that the thing's going to steal the show outside of the other two main event matches is that four-way ladder match. I think that should be a beautiful disaster.
It is, and I'm with you on the tag team match. Like, no matter how you feel about the Young Bucks and whether or not I go back and forth, because for a while I enjoyed it, and then they kind of disappear for a while. I don't know. It's just there hasn't been enough consistency there for me to really, as of late, grab onto it. But the one thing I know about the Bucks, the one thing I know about FTR, especially, they're going to deliver in the ring. And when you have two tag teams that caliber, and it's not like the Acclaimed are a bad tag team. Like, they're going, everyone's going to, I think, shine and perform there. I'm honestly really looking forward to Mercedes Moné versus Britt Baker. And I think that that has an opportunity. We've seen Britt have some of the best women's matches in AEW. We've seen, you know, Mercedes Moné as Sasha Banks have some of the best women's matches in WWE. So the two of them going head-to-head after the confrontation that they had last night on Dynamite, I think that absolutely has the potential to go out there and steal the show. I don't know where that's necessarily going to fall on the card, because, again, it's for the TBS championship. You know, it's not for the women's heavyweight, the women's world championship. So I don't know if it's going to fall mid-card, where it's going to be. But those are two of the biggest women stars they have in AEW. And I know both can go in the ring. I've been looking forward to this match. I think it's going to be a lot of fun watching those two go head-to-head inside Wembley Stadium.
You know, Gabe, with those two watching those promos to start off Dynamite in Cardiff, Wales on Wednesday, I don't know if it's personal or not. What did you think?
I think they want to make it personal. I don't know if that necessarily connected as much as they want. I mean, but again, going internationally is just steroids for these shows, right? Because that crowd in Cardiff was hot for just about anything that came out on Wednesday night. It was a great crowd. It was a fantastic crowd. We've seen WWE have this for SmackDowns and then some of their PLEs where, you know, whether they're, you know, in Europe or when they're going to Saudi Arabia, they're hitting these really, you know, these crowds are just rabid for all of these shows that they put in front of him. And the crowd was having a lot of fun chanting for Britt, chanting CEO, having a lot of fun. So I think they want to try to make it more personal, try to feel more personal, but I think that they kind of, it fell a little bit flat in terms of that, in terms of the storyline. I'm just looking at this from a pure match perspective. I think it's got an opportunity to be one of the best matches on the card.
I agree. And as far as who's going to win that one, well, I mean, Mercedes Moné's got the momentum. If Dr. Britt Baker loses, it doesn't mean that she takes a step back. I feel like she can get right back into contention again. I just feel like Camille's going to have something to say when this matchup is over. And so I don't know how Britt Baker deals with that, because I don't know if she has any allies that could help her in this spot.
No, but and I agree. I think Sasha probably ends up winning. I don't know if then that's a continuation of the feud of, oh, hey, Camille, she interfered, you know, the muscle interfered. So now that's a way to continue the match. And we end up having a trilogy kind of setting up, you know, something down the line for these two, because especially if they want to make it personal, the way to make it personal is to continue to set up matches between them. The way we see with CM Punk and Drew McIntyre over in WWE, you have to set up that continuation to try to make it feel a little bit more personal. I mean, I think the only match on here that I'm really not looking forward to is Jericho versus Hook. Like, yep. The one thing we say it every time an AEW pay-per-view comes up, you know it's going to deliver. And that's the only one I've got questions about, because Jericho can be hit or miss in a lot of his matches. And, you know, I think that's the only one I'm not really looking forward to in the 9-match, you know, main event card.
I think that's fair, only because this is the last chance for Hook. If he doesn't beat Jericho, he can't contend for the FTW championship, which is not really a championship. You go to AEW.com, I don't even think that that's even a thing. It's just, it was a made-up championship when Taz had it, and same thing here. It doesn't elevate anybody. It's just something you put around your waist. It's just weird. But I really believe that this four-way ladder match that we're going to see with Christian Cage, Killswitch, and Nick Wayne with Mother Wayne against the Bang Bang Gang versus the House of Black versus Pac and Blackpool Combat Club, which is Yuta and Cassignoli. There is no John Moxley on this card at all. But I just think that that four-way, especially if it would have been a ladder match, that wouldn't surprise me if that starts the show. The main card.
Oh, sure.
It very well could, because it's going to be crazy. I don't know how you could survive and not have some kind of injury from a ladder match with all those combustible elements. So, you know, for a bloodthirsty London crowd, they will love the, you know, the pyro and ballyhoo of what that could be, because that should be a lot of fun.
We're going to talk about the main event later, but I mean, clearly the best match. I think the best match on the card is going to end up being MJF versus Will Ospreay, because Will Ospreay is involved. Mm-hmm. Did you have any thoughts on their segment last night on Dynamite as they faced off? Ultimately, Will Ospreay decides it's worth the $127,000 or the 100,000 pounds to go after MJF, and then ultimately gets his ass kicked because he gets busted open with the Dynamite diamond ring.
So I'm watching this, and Will Ospreay is one of the few, if not the only one now in the company, that can go step for step with MJF. Now think about this. Ospreay started off the promo segment between he and MJF, and they were going back and forth, but it was Ospreay first. MJF would say something, and then Ospreay would fire right back. And there were some truths, and there's some story all within there, and which made it very interesting. I mean, so Will Ospreay is pretty much saying that, hey, you know, you were jerking off your friend in the main event of All In last year.
Last year.
And it's kind of like, kind of true, because I remember the three of us talking about this with Brian. It's just kind of like, you know, it's a big event. It's big for AEW, but it's a big event without a real main event. I remember us talking about that. Like, two friends, and that's supposed to be the main event. It was just the idea that AEW was in Wembley. But Ospreay said that. And then it was some truth in there and some storyline in which MJF was like, everyone was loving me until you got here. So now we can see the jealousy there from MJF and his, you know, you could see right through him when he said that. So I think all of that was really cool yesterday.
Yeah, the one critique I have of most of these MJF back and forth promo segments, I wish they were a little tighter. I feel like we certainly got the big moments, and I think the big lines hit the way that they wanted them to hit, the ones that you just highlighted. And then, of course, with him, with Ospreay talking to Tony Schiavone of, hey, what's Tony Khan say it is if I hit him? all right, it's worth it. And then he goes after it. Crowd pops, crowd go crazy. I think it just took him a little too long. I think it meanders. As good as MJF is on the mic, and he can still captivate you, every once in a while, it just kind of takes a little too long to get to those points. I wish they would just kind of find a way to tighten those up a little bit more. This isn't Monday Night Raw, where you've got 3 hours and those meandering promos, you know, kind of help get you through the night. I just think with the 2-hour Dynamite, you just had to, just a couple of minutes. I think you just should cut it down just a little bit, and I think it would have come off even better. It would have turned what was probably, to me, a B segment into an A-plus segment.
You're right, Gabe Neitzel, and guess what? When Eddie Kingston and Britt Baker say it on and off the record, they feel the same way you feel, because that wasn't just a one-off. We see MJF take 15 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
It's like anything else. You know why that's the case. Because clearly the numbers spike. Well, numbers spike. It's like you on ESPN Radio talking about the Dallas Cowboys. Even though you don't want to. And I know you don't, because I've been there. I didn't want to either on a hot summer of August in the weekend, and they're giving me Todd Archer. It's just like, you mean again? The Cowboys talk again?
How is Todd still available?
like every week with this? Yes, because the algorithm and the rating says when you talk about them, it's a spike. Same thing with MJF. It's just like anytime he speaks, he should be in there as longer than a match or as long as a match, because people want to know what he's going to say.
Yeah, I just think you could still even tighten it up just a little bit more and save some other things down the line. We've got some other things we want to talk about here on GKW. We will circle back and talk more about the main event of AEW, but we get into something we call the three count, other top three stories in the world of professional wrestling. What we have at number one is John Cena. A recent comment where, first of all, he made it seem like he's pretty much signed a lifetime deal with WWE after he's done with his farewell tour in 2025. But he also was ranking The Rock and Roman Reigns. And he ended up saying that The Rock was the GOAT and that Roman Reigns was number two behind him. What say you, Jonathan Hood? Who is the GOAT between The Rock and Roman Reigns?
Shout out to Shannon Sharp. Club Shay Shay is hot, boy. I tell you what.
It's real hot. I don't think it could get hotter. I can't wait till he shows up on a wrestling. I mean, he's going to show up in WWE, right? They're going to pop him for one night. Him show up.
Maybe Shannon Sharp mistaken John Cena for a black comedian. Very interesting how that happened. Because usually that is the case for Shannon Sharp.
I want to correct what I said. He said Roman is the GOAT, Rock is second. So he had that flipped with Roman and Rock.
Okay. Well, here's the thing. He's wrong on both ends. Like who's the GOAT? Who's the GOAT between Rock and Roman? Well, listen, I mean, you know, I've been a Flair guy for a long time, so I've always felt like he was the GOAT. I know there's a lot of Hogan fans are watching and listening, and they believe he's the GOAT. But between these two, I think it's pretty clear that The Rock is the GOAT between these two. And by the way, Roman would agree. Roman would agree with that assessment, that he feels like his family member, The Rock, is the GOAT, because The Rock, when he comes into WWE, Jim Ross gave him this statement of, this is going to be a blue chipper. This is a blue chipper. This is going to be the man at some point in time. And so The Rock was able to blossom into something great. Was a must-see in that whole Attitude Era. So if you even ask Roman on that same couch on Club Shay Shay, I'm sure he would say that that The Rock is the guy. And I don't think there's any question about that.
No, I don't think so. You know, the Rock is undeniably, between the two of them, the better sports entertainer, professional wrestler, whatever WWE term you want to throw on it. To me, it's undeniable, and maybe it's because I was a kid in the 90s growing up and The Rock was my favorite guy. You know, I was even a Rock guy over Stone Cold Steve Austin. But it's undeniable the energy that exists when The Rock is around. And we're seeing a lot of that same energy right now on SmackDown when Roman shows up. The crowds are going absolutely crazy for Roman. But the crowds went crazier for Rock. The crowds continue to still go crazy for The Rock. You know, even going back to when, you know, the whole Bloodline story got flipped on its head heading into WrestleMania, and you know, the internet turned on The Rock. The people didn't turn on The Rock. when Cody said, I'm giving up my spot. They heard Rock's music hit. The crowd popped. The crowd chanted for Rocky. The crowd was fully behind Rock and Roman. And then things flipped over the weekend with the way the internet reacted to it. So then The Rock just pivoted to a heel character. Oh, okay. Rock's like, sweet. I get to be this heel that gets to, you know, cut these 20-minute. How many 20-minute promos can Roman cut that you're locked into? Because The Rock did that on social media a couple different times in the run-up to WrestleMania last year.
Yeah.
And I don't know if there's anybody else. I was just complaining about the length of MJF's promo.
Yeah.
No, I was locked in for The Rock. And maybe it's because he's not around as much, but there's only one Rock. And to me, when we're talking, you know, I don't know if this is Bloodline specific for Cena. I mean, everybody's playing for second behind Dwayne.
So what is The Rock in sports parlance? Is that MJ? Muhammad Ali? Serena
Probably
Williams?
Ali.
Tiger
Probably
Woods.
Ali. I feel Ali.
Okay.
You know, because like to me, well, Tiger really changed the game. Serena changed it to an extent, although women's tennis certainly had some momentum with some of the stars before her. But Tiger drove, you know, men's professional golf to a level that I'd never seen. And maybe that's true for The Rock. Because, I mean, you know what? Maybe Rock and Tiger is the way. It wasn't just The Rock in the Attitude Era. He was certainly one of the faces of the Attitude Era that brought it to levels that we have still not seen since.
Mm-hmm.
But like when Tiger Woods plays a golf tournament today, it's not the same Tiger, but the ratings still go up.
Yeah.
Like you see Tiger Woods, people are tuning in to see Tiger. And The Rock is still pretty close to what he was in terms of, it's just the way professional wrestling obviously works. But it's the same thing. My Rock shows up, ratings going up because that guy's super popular and super over.
So Roman's John Rahm. That's right. That's Bryson DeChambeau? No?
Yeah, okay.
Is he Bryson? It's like,
yeah, I don't know who's driving the ratings in the world of men's professional golf today. When Roman shows up on SmackDown, those numbers, I mean, they don't get a Rock boost, but they've gone up the last couple of weeks because sure. He's been around. But that's also storyline dependent, right? Like the Bloodline's been the hottest thing going this entire time.
So what we're talking about is an all-time great in The Rock. And again, Mount Rushmore aside, we put that to the side. We're talking about in professional wrestling, The Rock, because he had those battles with The Undertaker and Stone Cold Steve Austin, it wasn't just The Rock himself. He couldn't just be by himself being a GOAT. He had to have these great matches and a battle with Vince McMahon and then going back between babyface and heel and being part of the Nation of Domination, all this stuff, right? And still relevant today as mm-hmm. part of the front office in WWE in some ways, along with his involvement still with this Bloodline story. We're going to see him again sometime this year. So his relevance and what he can still do in the ring still matters. Right now, I look at Roman Reigns as kind of like how we talk about Patrick Mahomes. He's on a roll right now, and his mm-hmm. career is not over yet, and that there's still great matches that we're going to see from Roman. How much longer? Who knows? He's been back and forth battling leukemia. He's healthy now. But the point is, though, at this particular time, Roman's not in that GOAT category. Long time as champion, sure, but I think that especially nowadays when he pops, people have missed him for so long, and so now he's on the scene trying to battle this Bloodline thing. So I mean, I would like, he'd be like Patrick Mahomes for me right now, like the GOAT of today.
Yeah, absolutely, like of the modern era. You know, you think of these different eras in WWE. You know, Attitude Era had a lot of different stars that helped lift it up. When you think of, you know, the Ruthless Aggression era, it's mostly Cena, but you also have like Evolution and Batista and Orton in there, I would say. I mean, after that, you kind of had, you know, CM Punk and Cena. I mean, Cena was a through line through a lot of it, but whatever you would call the modern era of WWE, I don't know if that's, you know, post-pandemic WWE or what we're calling it, but it's certainly Roman Reigns. Like he is the face of this generation without a doubt.
It's interesting. I wonder where Cena puts himself in that situation. I don't know if Shannon asked him that question.
Cena be in that conversation?
You mean like since 2000? I mean,
you're the historian. Is Cena sniffing any sort of Mount Rushmore in professional wrestling? Probably not, right?
I would say no. But then again, it's an era that really was bad. Now, we've talked about this on the show all the time about how John Cena was part of an era in which wrestling wasn't really cool. It just wasn't. Like, he had big matches against JBL and Batista and Randy Orton and so many others, and rightfully so. I just didn't like the era in which the championship was like the 24/7 title. It just kept hopscotching back and forth, and it's like he didn't have enough sustained runs for me to enjoy the reign. I enjoy Cena because he always came through in big matches. But the point is, though, is like, you know, when you see a champion, Gabe, it's kind of like, here's a guy here for a year that's battling everybody and getting it. But he'd always have to give it up every 9 to 10 months. It sucked for me at times.
But I get that. I think that was just kind of a carryover of what happened during the Attitude Era. Because the Attitude Era had so many people that were over with the crowd, and they hotshotted the title a few times between a handful of guys there too. But they made it all made sense in storyline. So they were kind of trying to, I don't know if they were trying to repeat that. And, you know, that's how you end up with JBL and the championships that he had. Because when you're talking about the Attitude Era and Rock and Stone Cold and Undertaker and Mankind and Triple H and Shawn Michaels, and like these are some of the all-time greats in the history, and they had were all in the Attitude Era. So you're trying to figure this out. Obviously, Kane had some runs and all those sorts of things with the heavyweight championship. So when you probably don't have the talent that you do, you're trying to heat up some of that talent. I think that was the byproduct. I think they've learned, especially like Triple H has learned from that mistake, which is why you're seeing these long title reigns, from whether that's in the, you know, Intercontinental Championship with Gunther, whether that is what we, you know, obviously saw out of Roman Reigns with the Universal WWE Championship, whatever, you know, it happens to be called, and all the different championships he won and, you know, put together. I think they kind of learned from that. Like, hey, before we start passing this around, let's make sure people are hot enough, you know, let's make sure they're good enough. So we're not just, you know, hot shotting the championship all around. And then we get a Jinder Mahal 6 month run.
Right. Exactly. I Cena deserves his flowers for what he did in WWE in the 2000s. There's no doubt of that. Ruthless aggression moving forward. I mean, his act got stale only because, not necessarily because of him, it's just because the creative wasn't great all the time. This stuff that he had to be able to talk through a script instead of being himself. You knew the true Cena in his matchups against The Rock, for instance, where he broke through with the script stuff and was speaking from his heart and thought, and really was doing what he thought was best for the program. But, you know, he deserves his flowers for the longevity he had as, what, 15-time champion? Or is he tied with Flair now, 16-time champion?
I think he's 16. I think he's tied with Flair.
Yeah, he deserves it. He deserves his flowers. It's just that, again, it's hard for me to appreciate it all the way through because you saw that stuff, Gabe. Some of that stuff, boy, especially those Monday Night Raws and those SmackDowns, those bad promos, and it was just for kids. It was like, it's like anything else in wrestling. There's certain things that's not for us. Like you and I, we're busy, so we don't have time for the death matches like Broitz does, or the cartoon matches, or fighting blow up dolls. That's his carnival. That's his thing. But that's not what we're into, you and I, because we're watching, you know, golf and baseball and basketball along with our wrestling, right? It's a nice brew of things, but like the other ancillary stuff, we're just not into. But wrestling has different flavors.
And one of those flavors is on the main events, AEW All In, number two this week on the three counts. Certainly going to be the main event. Swerve Strickland coming in as the champion in AEW, taking on Bryan Danielson in a championship versus career match. And a couple of things. I'm not going to lie, Jay Hood. When I first saw, and this is not to disparage the work that Sean Ross Sapp does, because he does a lot of work.
Yeah.
And a lot of good work. But he had a tease of, hey, Daniel Bryan or Bryan Danielson contract news, you know, for subscribers at Fightful Select. And part of me went, oh, they had done such a good job of this. Like, none of this information was out there. Turns out the information was he's working without a contract. So that's, you know, it's not like, oh, he signed this extension with AEW. He's doing this. Working without a contract keeps this open-ended and still keeps this match in suspense. I would say at the end of Dynamite last night, and the way that Bryan Danielson was encouraging Will Ospreay earlier in the show to use the Tiger Driver 91 And the way that Danielson came out and I'm assuming was dropping F-bombs since it was bleeped out on television about how he's the American bleeping dragon.
Yeah.
I kind of have a feeling that Brian's walking away with the AEW championship on Sunday. What do you think?
Well, this will be the first time that I will give my thought on this because either this show or the Sunday show I do on Busted Open on Sirius XM, I've told Justin LaBar, I said, I don't know who's going to win this, but I think I know. And if I'm going to give my prediction, it's got to be on our show. Right? We're not going
to. First time predicting is right here.
Yeah, on our show. Instead of farming it off to Busted Open, I'll do it right now. You know, the giveaway for me was not even a promo done by Swerve or by Bryan Danielson. The giveaway for me was Eddie Kingston on the couch. Eddie Kingston's there. If you saw that promo, I believe that was on Collision. And He's like, the camera's in here. I'm not making a comeback. This is not a comeback video. So you want everyone to know he's not coming back because that knee looks wrecked. And he just went in on Bryan Danielson talking about, this is not the American Dragon. Why are you doing this? You know, you look pitiful or you look pathetic or whatever he said. Mm-hmm. And I thought after watching that promo, it wasn't long, minute and a half, 2 minutes, maybe. After I watched it, I go, wait a minute. Why didn't Eddie Kingston just say, I'm looking forward to the match. I've wrestled both Bryan Danielson. I wrestled Swerve. It's going to be great. You know, I'm rooting for, you know, Danielson because he came up in the business. He just went in and just gutted Bryan Danielson. And I thought, Danielson's going to win this thing. Just from Eddie Kingston saying that, I'm like, Eddie, you're not going to give Bryan Danielson any credit at all? I mean, you know this guy. Just the way how dismissive he was of Bryan Danielson, I'm like, yeah, Danielson's going to win this at Wembley. And I think that we're going to see maybe my stipulation I brought up 3 weeks ago on the show might happen where Danielson will retire if someone else beats him. Or could we get another Sting situation in which Danielson wins and then retires with the title, and then we got to go through another tournament again. I don't know. But either way, Gabe, I'm telling you, I think that Bryan Danielson is going to win this one against Swerve.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Again, I thought and I think this is the story they've been, you know, trying to attempt to tell, with the Jeff Jarrett thing a couple of weeks ago when Danielson walked by Jarrett and, in order to get ready, you got to be able to do this and this. And then he ends up having that match against Jeff Jarrett. It's what they've been kind of hinting at of, maybe this isn't maybe the American Dragon isn't in there anymore. Maybe he's a different guy. He's just, he's a guy who wants to be at home with his kids. He wants to be home with his wife. And, the American Dragon that we all knew once upon a time isn't in there anymore. And then the reveal, I don't know if it's a reveal, but he comes out last night and no, this is the American Dragon. This is still the same guy. This is the fiery guy. He hits, his Busaiko knee right away as he comes out on Swerve Strickland when his music hit last night. We're going to see a more aggressive Bryan Danielson. And by the way, I think that's what we see. I think we're going to see an aggressive Bryan Danielson come out the gates of this. I don't think this is going to be a slow get into it type of match. I think Bryan Danielson's going to jump into it just to show he still has that aggression. But I was kind of hoping and kind of leaning this way, mostly because, again, Bryan Danielson said if he loses this match, he's never going to wrestle again. And again, every wrestler who's ever said that has eventually come back anyway. But at the same time, it felt like, I thought he was going to maybe still have this part-time career, come back, do some things, on the side. And to at least have the possibility of Bryan Danielson come back is something I want in my life as a wrestling fan. And I think ultimately that's what we get, because I think he's going to beat Swerve. And I think Swerve has done a very good job of pivoting to the heel here, because he kind of lives in tweener land, and he's pivoted back towards being the heel for this matchup against Bryan.
The crowd was solidly behind Bryan Danielson, especially in that promo in Cardiff, Wales, to the point where I kind of think that Bryan Danielson is going to muster up and give us a throwback match one more time. I don't mean WWE. I'm talking about Ring of Honor. I'm talking about the independent guy that I paid $10 to see at the rec center 20 minutes from my house. That's who we're going to see with Bryan Danielson. I just don't know what happens after that. I guess we got plenty of time to talk about that afterwards. But as far as this match is concerned, the way it's been laid out, Swerve's had a really good run. my hope is that Swerve gets back into the title picture again, because I think he's represented the company well. But with Bryan Danielson, I think for once he's telling us the truth. I think that we're going to see the Bryan Danielson we see in the past. I believe his next surgery is imminent at the end of the year, which means he can't have a long title reign, which means when they start cutting on you, Gabe, when they start cutting on you, especially your neck, dude, you see how long it took Edge to come back after 9 years on neck fusion or whatever was going on with him and the issues that he had in his back? I feel like that'll be the end. That's why I feel like this might be a coronation more so than a championship match for Danielson.
The options after this, if Danielson wins, are pretty simple. The options are it's the two things that you've already laid out. It's either he retires with the championship and then we get a tournament, which I'm not a big fan of, or next match is it. Next loss is it. That's it for me. And maybe this is it for Bryan Danielson. Like you mentioned, he's got another surgery pending, and maybe he's, you know, decided that, hey, this is going to be my last run no matter what, because his body has been through a lot. His body's been through so much. And if that's the decision he makes, like, again, as a wrestling fan, it would make me sad, but he's certainly earned that right to make that decision as one of the best wrestlers of his generation. The question just then would become, who retires Bryan Danielson? Who's Gabe, the one who pins him to the mat?
Gabe, do you see why the power of the promo matters?
Yeah.
You see that? Because the promo is so strong for both of these guys.
Yep.
That we're making our predictions, but we don't know. I mean, Bryan Danielson is so steadfast and was in that camera on Wednesday night making you believe that he could win the championship. But the way it ramped up, it came from no confidence sitting on the sidelines. And as you mentioned, Jeff Jarrett tries to inspire him. Bryan Danielson beats Jeff Jarrett in a matchup that's all over the place, right? But Bryan Danielson wins. Bryan Danielson sits down with Jim Ross, and there's like a little bit more confidence. And it just keeps ramping up to what we saw at Cardiff Wales, where he's telling Will Ospreay, hey, use it, do it, to the point where it was a low confidence, I don't know if I should be in this match, to where it is now. Swerve Strickland comes from having all these opponents. He's beaten so many people. He gets to Bryan Danielson, and now he goes from babyface to kind of going back to his heel time with Hangman Page, and he makes you believe he's going to win too.
Yeah, because again, he's a tremendous – that's the thing with Swerve. Like, he's always been this great talent, and I think it's been – this has been the best AEW champ since –
Jericho?
Kenny?
It's a Hangman Page?
Well, no, I mean, I would have loved to see what Punk would have done full time, yeah. But like, I mean, it's almost restoring it. And I saw this on social media where they had the eight guys who have won it. You know, it was Jericho, then it went to Mox, then it went to Kenny, then it went to Hangman, to CM Punk, MJF, Joe, and now Swerve. So those are the eight that have held it. And as much as I would have loved more from Joe, you know, he was the transition champion. We've talked about MJF. Yes, he's the longest reigning AEW champion of all time. At times, the championship was in the backseat to the ROH tag team championships, which just didn't seem right to me.
Nope.
Hangman's run was meh. Same thing with Punk because he got injured. I mean, honestly, Swerve has been on the best run to AEW as their world champion since Kenny Omega.
I think that's fair. I think that's fair. Now, just keep in mind now, I have these old notes from last Sunday when I was on Sirius talking about this. This is what Swerve has done. And again, Swerve can lose on Sunday, but just understand the resume. So Swerve Strickland has defeated Adam Page, Takeshita, Samoa Joe, as you mentioned, to win the title at Dynasty. Kyle Fletcher, Claudio Castagnoli, Brian Cage, Nick Wayne, Christian Cage, yeah, Kill Switch, Roderick Strong, Will Ospreay, Okada, Amazing Red, that was an independent show, and Ishii. Pretty damn good resume. By the way,
it's a good run, man. That's a good run.
You want to compare that to Cody Rhodes? You ready? You ready? Cody Rhodes.
As long as you have it there.
AJ Styles.
Yeah.
As we've seen around the loop, right? Nakamura. Solo Sikoa. Santos Escobar on the Mexican tour several times. And Drew McIntyre. And that's the list.
nobody really that you thought was believable, right?
just the small list of Cody, and I just gave you like a who's who from all over the globe for Swerve, who he's faced this year. So it's interesting.
Yeah, and now he's got Bryan Danielson Sunday. Again, that pay-per-view starts at noon Eastern time. We pivot back for our number three story to WWE. And we go back to the Bloodline. Tale as old as time.
Yes.
We were told this over a year ago, that they were in the third inning. And at the time we thought, really? This is only the third inning? Really? Really, Paul? Really? And even without the WWE Championship, which is in the hands of Cody Rhodes, they've continued to have this be the top story in all of professional wrestling, not just SmackDown or Raw or WWE. It's all of professional wrestling. Bloodline is strong. What inning do we think the Bloodline story is in right now?
The Brewers 4, the Cubs nothing at American Family Insurance Field. I would say that it is the bottom of the fourth. That's where we are right now. Yeah, bottom of the fourth. And here's why it's bottom of the fourth. Because not just what we know of where's Jey Uso's loyalty lie through this solo run he has. Where is Jimmy Uso? What does he think? Where is Paul Heyman? Where is The Rock? It's not only that. It's Zilla Fatu. It is Hikaleo that'll be making his way from New Japan. I think he's already signed with WWE. It's Bad Luck Fale from New Japan. It's Journey Fatu, who is Sam Fatu's, I believe, son. It is the Vanna Fatu. There's a lot more coming. They're waving him in like a third base coach. There's more coming. I mean, they're just waving him in. They're going to continue this, man. I just think that Roman and what we're seeing right now is just this, just the standard. That's just what we're seeing right now, just on the surface. Gabe, there's more coming.
Think about how long they could drag this out. Roman's been back. This upcoming week's going to be his third week that he's back. Yeah. He hasn't even touched a microphone yet. He hasn't touched a microphone.
Nope.
We haven't heard from Roman why he's back, why he decided to take out Solo instead of go after Cody. Obviously, he wants to be the tribal chief, but he hasn't stood out there in the middle of the ring with a microphone. He's just gone out there and attacked Solo. That's what he's done the last couple of weeks. Hasn't had a microphone in his hand. Mm-mm. And it's still been, I'm not complaining about that, by the way. It has been really good the last 2 weeks. It has been fantastic. It's been so much fun. But that's how good this is right now, is that Roman Reigns hasn't had to cut a promo. We haven't had to bring back Paul to cut a promo. It's just been Solo in the ring. And then last week we get the introduction of the Samoan Knight, werewolf.
Yeah.
As we thought that, oh, maybe they were going to keep Jacob Fatu, kind of separated from Roman for a while. Nope. Right away. Week two, they show how dangerous Fatu can be. And it's going to be exciting, because at some point you're going to have the recruitment period of Roman, because this is clearly building towards Survivor Series this November. So over the course of the next 3 months, it's who's Roman going to recruit? How is he going to recruit him? Are they going to be able to get any sort of one up on the Bloodline 2.0? Is The Rock going to come back? Whose side is he going to be on? I'm assuming Paul's going to be with, I brought this up earlier with Paul Heyman, because he's always heel. If Paul comes back, we're going to get a babyface Paul Heyman, or is he going to stab Roman in the back and go over to Bloodline 2.0? Who knows?
See?
It's all fascinating.
This is why it's the bottom of the fourth. That's where it is, because there's so much more to go. There's more than you see. So Paul Heyman was at the Fanatics Fest in New York City over the weekend. Mm-hmm. He had a sit-down conversation with Sam Roberts. And so funny about kayfabe, right? Like, Paul Heyman was taken out, but yet he bounces back in his suit and he sits down and he has this conversation. Let me just explain to you, Sam, sir. And he's breaking it down to him. It's so funny. And he said that, I don't know when I'll be back. I'll come back when I heard the soundbite, something along the lines of, I'll come back when I'm needed for the story. I don't have to come back anytime soon. I'll come back when I'm needed for the story, which means that could be next week or that could be in 5 months. Who knows? But there's still more.
My guess is sooner rather than later, Because my guess is, I mean, I know Roman was pulled off of, I think he was advertised for a show sometime September that maybe he may be getting pulled off of. Mm-hmm. But in order, if Roman is not going to be present, right? And there he's previously with Bloodline 1.0, you had Paul in his place, you had Jimmy and Jay, then it was just kind of Jimmy and Solo. You had other people there representing Roman. And, you know, most of the time when you saw Paul Heyman, he was on his phone. Oh, I was just talking with the tribal chief. So, like, Roman still had a presence. If Roman is going to be floating a little bit in and out and not going to be on SmackDown every week, which I would be shocked if he was based on the contract rumors about him, you know, obviously he doesn't have to be there every week with the contract that he has with WWE, but you still need someone there. And you would probably need Paul Heyman there to be that right-hand man for Roman. So if I had to guess, I would guess that Paul's back soon.
This has to start heating up now between now and the end of the year or from now to Royal Rumble because, you know, if Roman's not there, it's going to be Cody. And if it's not Cody, it's going to have to be Roman or someone else. This is why every week there's going to be a build on who can Cody trust and who can Roman trust because they can't fight them alone. Can't do it. And so that's why this is all fascinating to me because we're going to get an introduction of so many people that's going to be part of this fray. And probably some of the names I mentioned, the Zilla Fatus, who, by the way, is going to be wrestling in a couple of weeks in Chicago. I need to get advice about something regarding Zilla Fatu wrestling in Chicago. But nonetheless, what I'm looking at is the amount of new faces we're going to see from New Japan coming in that's part of this family. I mean, look. We just lost Afa, the Wild Samoan. Mm-hmm. We lost Sika in June. Do you know how many grandkids they have, Gabe? I mean,
all of them. All of the grandkids.
I mean, do you know how many cousins and grandkids? It's like
I saw what they did in Vegas. I saw the Bloodline family tree. There's so many names on that thing.
I mean, I don't, you know, I tried to take off my shoes and socks. And I still couldn't count them. And it was so many. I mean, I'm just telling you that this thing can go until Heyman's grandkids are the managers of the Bloodline. It can go that far because there's wrestlers that are in their 20s just waiting for a shot at WWE. Mark Henry brought this up as an idea. He goes, there's so many people in this family tree that's wrestling in the Indies or internationally that he would lend out the Bloodline name to them. Like,
kind of like Bullet Club.
Yes.
Like Bullet Club was like everywhere, you know, yes. Bullet Club was absolutely everywhere. ROH, New Japan, Indies, like Bullet Club was the big thing. Yeah. That's not a bad idea.
I mean, I know these names. It's not like I'm sitting down watching these matches, Gabe. I'm just saying like I scroll through Twitter and like, oh there's yeah. a match here in the there's a Journey Fatu who's apparently a Mance Warner type that he just does these crazy matches. He doesn't have regular matches, he has death matches. Okay, put that in WWE, see what that's like. Journey Fatu. I think that's Solo's cousin. it's crazy, man.
What main events WrestleMania Night 2? Cody Rhodes or Bloodline? Or are they going to be intertwined by that time again?
I think it's Bloodline related against Cody, but okay. it's not solo Roman. That's not what it
okay.
is. It shouldn't be at least.
Well, I think that's a spot for potentially Rock Roman whenever that happens. I'm just curious because again, Bloodline is undoubtedly the biggest story in professional wrestling.
No doubt. And arguably the greatest of all time.
Oh, I think it's the greatest storyline in professional wrestling history.
It's the meat and the longevity, right?
Yeah, it's how good it is and how long they've been able to keep it going. That's a professional wrestling story lasting 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
By the time they're done with this thing, it's impressive. That is impressive.
I have a question for you. Since we're talking about Bloodline, I need your help on something.
All right, hit me.
Let me check the date. The first game of the NFL season is September 5th, right? Thursday, September 5th?
Thursday, September 5th, yes.
I forgot the matchup, but I know that's the first NFL game. The same night.
It's Ravens Chiefs.
Ravens Chiefs. Oh. that's a tough one, man. See Chiefs and see Lamar Jackson, all that. Okay, reason why I asked the question is because on September 5th, I have an opportunity to get a ticket to see Zilla Fatu for the first time. The cousins of the Usos and Roman and all that. Zilla Fatu, the first time in person against Mustafa Ali for HOG Wrestling, House of Glory Wrestling at Logan Square in Chicago. And it's like, that's like a half hour for me. It's up north. And like, but I can sit through the traffic to get there. Should I just watch, find a stream to watch that, or should
find
I see
a
that in person?
Find a stream. It's, I mean, again, sitting through the traffic, especially knowing, like, if you had a bad traffic patch, you're like, oh man, I could be watching Lamar Jackson versus Patrick Mahomes right now.
Right.
Yeah, I think you find a stream. I think you should. Somebody will be streaming it somewhere.
I just think I find it fascinating that you and I can comfortably talk about this on a wrestling show where our wrestling fans are like, you gotta go. You gotta go see Zilla Fatu. You got to go.
I mean, he'll be back someday.
I would say so. I mean, I'm not saying that we won't see Lamar Jackson against Patrick Mahomes again, but it is the first game of the NFL.
It is the first game of the season, right? Yeah. Like we've been waiting all year for the first game of that season. It's just what I'm saying.
I was thinking about that. So thank you for answering that question.
Oh. We got your back. Always got your back here. Time for a little news and notes here. The Hulk Hogan biopic, at least for right now, has been scrapped. Todd Phillips, who is attached to direct it, saying recently that he has moved on and is no longer going to be associated with the project. So right now it doesn't have a director. It doesn't have a direction. So I don't know if that's ultimately going to happen.
I'm totally fine with that. I'm totally fine with that. Here's the question. Was the biopic going to be able to do a deep dive into Hogan with Bubba the Love Sponge's wife, that whole sex tape thing? And would it go deep into Hogan getting canceled for a section of the audience? Like, how deep does it go? If it's just his 80s run, I know what that is.
Yeah.
So,
don't need it.
Like,
my guess is they would have had to avoid a lot of the sex tape stuff. Just because, I mean, although it's still out there, I don't know. I don't know how any of that works. I don't know how carefully or light they would have had to tread based on him winning his lawsuit against Gawker.
I don't know, like, his run as TNA president. I don't know what else. I don't even know anything else about Hulk Hogan. I think we know the Hogan today. I knew the Hogan when I was growing up, watching him in the AWA. And it's kind of like, I don't think I'm missing anything. Quite frankly, had a great run with Vince as champion, beat the Iron Sheik at the Garden, and he's very political. He wouldn't face Bret Hart for whatever reason. I don't know what else I really need to know about Hulk Hogan. You?
Yeah. I'm good. I'm good. I do not need any more Hulk Hogan content.
Really? Really? You don't want any more Hogan content? Okay.
What is a Hogan like? What, someone's going to do a documentary on him? I'm going to find out he's racist. Like, no, already know that. Like, what else do I need to know about this guy? I saw his run. I saw what he does. Yeah. I saw him cut the promo at the RNC. He was basically like, everyone's like, oh man, I can't believe he did that. Like, it was every Hulk Hogan promo ever. Like, it's the only thing the man can do. Of course he was going to, like, talk about Hulkamania and rip off a shirt. Like, that's what you pay Hulk Hogan to show up for.
I think that's all fair. Nothing I need to know about Hogan. I know everything I need to know about Hulk Hogan. I don't want to be a consumer of his content. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm very fair because I'm in the same boat.
Yeah.
Chris Jericho has heard everyone's pleas to retire. He said he's not going to be retiring anytime soon. Said, in fact, he's got a six pack. He can steal the show on any given night, and said he's looking forward to his matchup against Hook coming up Sunday at Wembley.
You know what's interesting about Chris Jericho? The audience, I think, knows this, but I think it needs to be said out loud. I'm amazed at how he's been able to be as healthy as he is at his age. You know, he's never had he's never had an injury. Do you know this?
He had to have had. Really?
Nope.
Like, no big major surgery?
Nope.
Huh.
Nope. Think about it. How often have you not seen Jericho on your TV? He's always been on your TV.
I mean, for the most part, the only time he's the big chunks of time he misses is when Fozzy's touring.
Yeah, he's never had a surgery or has missed time because of illness or anything like that. He is a real unicorn in the business. And I know that you're tired of him. I know Brian's tired of him. I understand. But the more tired you are of him, the more you're going to see him on your TV. He's actually just doing just with, you know, some wrestlers do in the past, in the present, and just talking about TV time and high guys and being fake. He's doing like what some wrestlers do. I don't know if that's him that's like that, but I think he's mimicking some wrestlers. It was like, oh, hi, guys. You know, got to be on TV time, and I'm just here for the boys and all this stuff. So he's just bullshitting with the audience. But he is strange that way. He's never had a surgery or a major injury that's kept him out in his time in wrestling.
Meanwhile, Mercedes Moné saying recently she was planning on returning to WWE after being at WrestleMania 39. But then after returning or being in the crowd at All In a year ago at Wembley Stadium, she decided that she wanted to be a part of AEW. Because she had not felt anything like that in a long time, that a non-Mania event had 80,000 people in one spot, and it woke something up within her.
You can understand how that crowd and that event could sell anybody. Mm-hmm. Like, wait, you've got 80,000 people in here, and it's not run by Vince McMahon? Okay, first of all, I'm going to get paid, she's thinking, Mercedes Moné. And secondly, there's a lot of talent here I've never faced before. I got to challenge myself. You take a look at these wrestlers, Gabe, that step out of the WWE system and they go to the indies or go to AEW. It is a challenge. Like Trinity,
oh, Naomi, totally had to do different, the same thing. Yeah,
she goes. She's never been outside the WWE system. She goes to TNA. She's got a taste of it. Like, okay, you know what? People appreciate my brand. I'm getting my T-shirt sold in the back table here at TNA. Okay, so let me go back to WWE. At least people know who I am outside of the company. So for Mercedes, it's just a great challenge. That's why I'm looking forward to that matchup you mentioned against Dr. Britt Baker.
Yeah, one of many, I think, to come for Mercedes, certainly in AEW. And finally, we knew World's End pay-per-view was happening in late December for AEW. Well, the WWE has decided to run a house show in the same city of Orlando on that very day. So we are going to get head-to-head house show WWE versus pay-per-view for AEW.
Which one would you go to if you were down there with Broitz? If you were in Orlando, which one would you go to? Because you know the house show is going to be stacked.
House show is going to be stacked, which means World End is also going to have to be stacked. I think I would probably still go to World's End.
I wonder who the champion is at that time. Is that Brian? Is that Swerve?
I mean, well, because that's well, especially if that's it. If that has the potential to be Danielson's last match,
yeah,
then it's World's End. It's not even close. And maybe that's what AEW has to do is like save, you know, have people think that that could be Danielson's final match, and that's how you draw all the people.
I know the internet caught fire when they saw that news come across, and it's again. I think we all know this, but it has to be said. Listen, it's a wrestling war. No matter if you think the AEW is small potatoes and you think WWE is the
pissant company.
Yeah, exactly. Right. You're the pissant company. Yeah. But here's the thing. It's a wrestling war. That's why they did it. That's why. It's like they're going to be in Orlando. Wait, we have our shows in Orlando. Hey, we'll put a show in Orlando and it will measure up. It's just great for the fans in that area. They got to choose. And I think that both arenas will be full. And both will be entertained.
Without a doubt.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, would you have matches of the week?
You got another half hour?
Whew, got some options this week.
How about
a couple from WWE? I'll start with Friday Night SmackDown. DIY versus the Street Profits. Street Profits win. They're now the number one contender for the tag team championships.
Brother, I love a good tag team match, as well know. That thing delivered.
Oh,
that
yeah.
That thing delivered. I love great tag team matches. This is
which
why.
Which is the great thing about SmackDown right now is you're getting the great storyline from the Bloodline. And they've had some pretty good matches the last couple of weeks on SmackDown. And that one happened to be the one that caught my eye this week.
It's funny because the next day you go to Collision and you get FTR against the Acclaimed. on Collision, which was, yep. again, you may not have liked the finish, but this is what their culmination was to be able to have a three-way at All In. FTR and Acclaimed at the end of Collision was awesome. Let's see what else we have here. We have Claudio against Okada on Dynamite.
Again, using the time limit draw, for whatever reason, AEW seems to do it in bunches. But it was worth it last night. That was the right way to do that, is to showcase both of those guys, not have a loser, not have a DQ finish, have it go that far, and then come out and have the Young Bucks get more heat on themselves. I think that was a great, fantastic.
Darby Allin and FTR against the Elite. The trios match that took place on Dynamite
last night. Yep.
That was really
How'd you feel? How'd you feel about Pete Dunne versus Sheamus?
Oh my God. And I love that match. They could have that as often as it like, thank you.
they're going to, that, like, that's not the last time we're seeing that in 2024. I promise you,
brother. Let me just tell you something. When you can have the understanding of, so I'm going to beat you about the head and shoulders. So are you ready for it? Oh yeah, no problem. Beat the crap out of me. It's fine. And both guys can just shake hands afterwards and it's good. Sheamus looks so beat up after that matchup, but you know, that's what's going to happen, right? You know, it's going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
Oof, God, and, you know, Sheamus is just so underrated. Every time he's in there, we talked about this with Andrade the other week, like, when Andrade's in there, it's got to be 15 minutes, 20 minutes, because he can't do five, even though he's speed champion. But you know it's good when he's in there for 15, 20. Same thing with Sheamus. When that hair starts flopping and he's got the full sweat going, you know it's going to be a great match.
I feel like I've appreciated Sheamus more as time has gone on. Like when he beat, at the time, Daniel Bryan in 15 seconds at whatever WrestleMania that was, like, oh, kind of sucks. I kind of hate Sheamus because of it. But for him to have the longevity that he has, and again, like the banger after banger after banger, he's actually right. Like, it's not just a slogan. It's not just a catchphrase to pop the crowd. It's a true statement the way he's been able to deliver.
Yeah, I just enjoy him because I just know there's a great effort there. There are no bad Sheamus matches lately. It's just strong matches, you know.
No.
For those of you that get TNA, and even if you watch TNA, you might not get TNA. There's a Nick Nemeth against Josh Alexander. It was a 30-minute draw. They're going to have another match, Gabe, I think at the end of the month, I think the 29th or 30th on TNA Plus. It's going to be a 60-minute Iron Man match. So Nemeth against Josh Alexander is very good as well. It's just, the product has just been great across the board. It's just been so much fun. It really is. And I like to remind people that you can catch me on Sundays on Busted Open on Sirius XM from 9 to noon Eastern and 6 o'clock Pacific time. We have fun. So I carry Good Karma Wrestling over to Sirius XM and talk wrestling there as well.
You know, I'll tell you what, it's going to be a nice way. If you wake up, throw on, you know, Busted Open on Sunday leading into, AEW All In. I think that's a good way. That's a nice little way to spend your Sunday.
Yeah, and the banner stays up, by the way.
The banner never goes down.
That's the
deal. I've seen the social media videos.
That's like, because that was the deal. He goes, can you do Sundays? Like, yeah, but the banner stays up because I'm loyal to our show first. So now we're getting people, crossover, Busted Open people, listening to our show, because that's the deal, pal. Because in professional wrestling, Gabe Neitzel, and we get these handshake deals, NXT's talking to TNA, and AEW's talking to Rev Pro. Okay, well, Good Karma Wrestling with a handshake deal to Busted Open, and so that's how it works, the crossover.
That's absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely love it. Again, check out our YouTube page, youtube.com/@goodkarmawrestling. Comment, subscribe. Check out the video if you're listening to the audio version of this. I'm excited. It's going to be a fun week. Broich will be back next week to react to everything that happens at All In and Wembley Stadium. WWE continues to build. One thing I know, we're going to talk about it next week right here on GKW.